All right. Well, welcome back, everyone. If you weren't with us last week, or even if you were, I need a reminder. We are doing in the month of January our purpose statement, that mission statement that's on the back of our worship guide. And so we're going through each one of those and doing that until about 10:20. And then we call Alan to come up and teach us a new song and learn some songs that maybe we haven't sung before and be able to add that to our quote-unquote repertoire of worship music. So anyway, that's our plan and design for today. So if you were with us last week, we began this series looking at the importance of purpose. And maybe that was on your mind this week, the aspect of I have purpose, I'm to live for a purpose, that you can't have a purposeless life. You can't live without purpose. In fact, that's always one of those signs of depression that those that are trained to look for it are examining. Does this person have a purpose? Are they looking to the future? Because if they don't, that's oftentimes a sign of clinical depression, having that purposelessness. So God, as we saw last week, is a God of purpose. He's a God of design. He made us for purpose, and that is, as Presbyterians, to glorify Him and to enjoy Him forever. In fact, this morning for the sermon, kind of beginning the sermon in that same way, so you'll kind of hear a little bit of that. We're made to glorify God. We're made to worship Him. We're made to serve Him. In other words, we're made to be a follower of Christ, to be a disciple of Christ. And in as much as we follow Christ, as much as we glorify God, we are doing what we're created to do. And not only today and not only tomorrow will that be our purpose, not only next week, but in 5 years or 50 years or as long as the Lord will give you life. That will still be our purpose in this life as well as in the life to come. And that's why you know it is true purpose, because it doesn't end, right? It is the purpose for which we were created for. And so as you find that purpose, there's fulfillment in that. Because as we are doing what God created us to do, then we are living in a way that we are to live. And again, as we do so, we find joy, we find delight in that. And hopefully a part of our discipleship is that is kind of contagious, right? As we live these purposeful lives, joyful lives, peaceful lives, then others are seeing that in us. Again, Peter says, always be ready to give the hope that is within you. Which is kind of suggesting that people are seeing that hope in your life and in the way that you live. And we are just pointing others to Christ, that we are the conduit in which for others to see the true purpose for which God has created us to. And again, if there's something that we delight in, if there's something that we enjoy, there is something that we like, what do we naturally do? We tell others, right? If you find a good restaurant or a good book or a good movie or something of that nature, it's just very natural. It just kind of flows off of our lips. And so hopefully as we find joy and delight in God, we share in that joy with others. So we're to be disciples, we're to make disciples. And again, that's not anything new. Jesus says that in Matthew chapter 28, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them and teaching them all that I've commanded you. So that's the object. That's the goal. So we've been looking at, as part of our mission statement, purpose statement, what is a disciple? What does that look like? What is a follower of Christ? What are the fundamental things that a disciple does? And so that's where this kind of mission statement came about. If I can borrow your worship guide here. Again, it's every week. It's on the back. It's even in kind of the side here of our news and events. But the purpose, the mission statement is to gather together. We as a church are to gather together to know and worship the triune God, grow in the covenant family of God as Reformed disciples, and show forth the love of Christ as servants and witnesses for the glory of God. So it centralizes on those three words, to know, to grow, and to show. So last week we looked at the know, what it means, and this week the grow. And then hopefully, Lord willing, Pastor Myers will teach us on that last aspect of showing forth the love of Christ as servants and witnesses. So again, is this the end-all, be-all purpose statements, mission statements? No, right? Are there more things that could be added to it? Sure. But again, these are things that are central to what it means to be a disciple and what it even means to go through the discipleship process. As we look at that today, that word disciple or discipleship has become so common to us, right? Sometimes I think we become inoculated to it, that it doesn't really have the true emphasis that it should, or the true defining nature that it ought to have in our lives, to think of ourselves as followers of Christ, as disciples of Christ. That should be a core identity to who we are. So if you have your Bibles this morning, turn to Matthew chapter 4, 18 through 22. Pretty familiar passage here. You had two sets of brothers, Peter and Andrew, James and John. And Jesus calls them to be disciples. So beginning in verse 18, while walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who's called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." Immediately they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, in the boat with Zebedee, their father, mending their nets. And he called them. Immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. You see this aspect of Jesus commanding. It's not a, hey, if you want to. It is a demand. Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And we see that they did this not just reluctantly, but willingly. And in fact, as it says twice with both of these sets, immediately. And I think that immediacy is stressed there, that this was truly a life-altering call, that their aspect of being fishermen was part of their livelihood. You can even say that it was a part of their upbringing. Obviously, we see James and John with their father in the boat doing this work. And so there's an aspect of it being passed down, perhaps from generation to generation. But as Jesus calls them, they leave that work and begin to follow him and begin to do a different work. Now, does that mean that they did not come back to fishing at all ever? No, they did at certain times. But I would say to you that because of this call, they saw themselves as different fishermen now. As Jesus says, being fishers of men instead of fishers of fish. And that is the aspect of what is taking place, that they were called into this new calling, this new call upon their life, this call to be the disciples of Christ. Now, we know that Jesus did this with eight others, and so that there was 12 disciples in total. And in many ways, you could say that these 12 were the grand total of Jesus' ministry, at least his earthly ministry, that these 12 were kind of the lasting legacy of Christ after he is crucified and is risen and ascends into heaven. these 12 are the ones that were to carry on the work. Now, were there others? For sure. We know that there were some women as well. But these were the ones, these 12 were the ones that were with him from the beginning to the very end as his disciples. And I always find that fascinating. And you should find that fascinating too. That these 12 were not, quote unquote, the cream of the crop. Right? They were not the elite. They were not the Ivy League, you know, trained individuals of Jerusalem and Israel. These were Galilean fishermen. These were ones that, you know, culturally you would say are kind of blue collar. They're not those that we would think would be the ones that Jesus would pour himself into. And I always kind of like to think of the angel's perspective, you know, when Jesus gets back and this conversation between Jesus and the angels. Again, this is all hypothetical, so think of it as such. Maybe this is going too much into the mind of Joel, which might be a scary place. But I always think, you know, as Jesus gets back and the angels are like, how was it? How did it go? You know, what is going to take place from this? And Jesus saying, here, these are the ones, these are the 12 that I've poured my life into, and these are the ones that are going to carry on the mission. And I always have this thinking that the angels are going, those 12? You sure about that? I'm not so sure this is going to last, right? And that's how we should think, right? That's how the angels should think. That's how we should think, that this is not going to last. This is going to fizzle out. If it is not the work of God, that if it's not the Spirit of God working through these individuals, that this is going to do anything. It's going to mount to more than a hill of beans. But yet, again, that should encourage us, right? That should encourage us because, you know, are we the cream of the crop? Are we the elite? No. We are the ones that are foolish and slow to understand and ineffective. And if it was left up to us, we would tank this thing real quickly, wouldn't we? In fact, you remember what Paul says to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, because the Corinthians were kind of beginning to think a little highly, a little too highly of themselves, and beginning to have these fights within themselves. But Paul reminds them, your calling. He says, for consider your calling, brothers. Not many of you are wise, according to the worldly standards. Not many were powerful. Not many of noble birth, but God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, even the things that are not, to bring to nothing the things that are. Why? So that no human being might boast in the presence of God. Again, that it would be God that gains all the glory, not us. And that's why, even again, this morning, as we're looking at the Lord's Prayer, when we think about, Lord, your kingdom come, your will be done. His kingdom's not going to come unless he, the king, brings it about. His will on this earth will not take place unless it is through his blessing and through his Spirit. Because if it's up to us, it wouldn't take place. It wouldn't take place with the disciples. It wouldn't have taken place throughout church history. It wouldn't take place in us. But it has, right? The kingdom has spread and is spreading to the four corners of this earth because God is blessing this process. And what is that process? It's the discipleship process. And is it slow? Is it arduous? Yes, absolutely. You might think, you know, God, is there a more effective, efficient way to do this than the way that you are? And perhaps there would be, but yet this is the method that he's chosen. In other words, that he has so tied his work and the work of his kingdom to you and to his church that it is going to take place in this way and in this manner and in this process. Okay? And so, again, as we think about this aspect, it's not just, yeah, this is a good method. No, this is the only method. This is the only method that God has given to us, is the discipleship method. It was the method that he established himself, you know, throughout the scriptures, but we see it specifically in the life of Christ as he raises up these disciples and as he continues to do so. His work continues to go on through you and through me and through his church. So what does that look like? Again, I need to keep hurrying on. We looked at that aspect of knowing God, and that's where it begins, and we never complete that. We never outgrow that. In fact, as we said, we'll be knowing more about God for all of eternity. But as we know him, then we grow in that knowledge. And that's that second aspect of what it means to grow as disciples of Christ. As I mentioned last week, Joel Beakey said the knowledge of God in the heart transforms a person. That as we know God, as we grow in that relationship with him, we are transformed. What's transformed? Everything. Everything is transformed. There is not one part of knowing God and being in relationship to him that leaves any aspect of us not transformed. All of it is transformative. And as a result, there will be growth. And when we talk about growing, we're not talking about specifically as a church, meaning, you know, nickels and noses, as some would see it, growing in our numbers or in our budget. No, the primary growth that we're talking about is individually and corporately, spiritually so, that we would grow in maturity, that we would grow in sanctification. And I love how, again, the catechism puts this aspect of sanctification, because that's really what we mean when we talk about growth. It says this: sanctification is the work of God's free grace, whereby we are renewed in the whole man after the image of God, and are enabled more and more to die unto sin and to live unto righteousness. And it's amazing how scriptural that, I don't actually know what that is there, Jim, but it was just left up here. So enough to knock down and be a distraction. That's all it is. This aspect of being renewed in the whole man, renewed in the image of God, that God is transforming us. He is making us into what he originally purposed us to be, which was what he originally purposed Adam and Eve to be. And we know that that image was affected. It was marred by the fall. But instead of God just, you know, scrapping that and starting over, he decided to take that which was broken, that which was marred, and to renew us, to transform us. And that is that aspect of growing more and more, as it says, into that image of God. That as we die unto sin, as we live unto righteousness, that's what that growth it means and looks like. So Ephesians 4, 17 through 24, I don't have to read it all, but it says this: put off your old self, which belongs to your former manner of life, and is corrupt through deceitful desires, and be renewed in the spirit of your minds. Put on the new self, created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. It very simply says there that aspect of, if you want to know what sanctification looks like, if you want to know what growth looks like, it's that. It's putting off the old man and putting on the new man. Putting to death our sin and our sin nature in rising in newness of life, in this new aspect of righteousness and holiness. And so when we talk about growing, that is not some type of kind of legalism or some type of just externally putting on the smiley face and, you know, getting dressed up and looking right to your neighbors and to your coworkers. No, it's not primarily external, it's internal. And as it is internal, then it manifests itself externally. That's the kind of growth and sanctification that we are talking about, that Christ has redeemed us from not only the penalty of sin in our justification, but he has now saved us from the power of sin in sanctification. And then one day, as we think about the whole salvation, he'll save us from the presence of sin. That's glorification. But that aspect of now, because of Christ, we have been saved and delivered from the power of sin. So, as Christians, there should be no, quote-unquote, life-dominating sins. Sins that we go, hey, I this is too much. I'll never defeat it. This will always defeat me. No, the Bible says through the Holy Spirit, through the transformative process, through the sanctification process, through this process of growth, we are able, by God's grace, through His blessing, through the means of His Word and Spirit and the means of His church, that we can overcome even the greatest of sins. And what a blessing and pleasure that is, because God desires for us to live free from the sin. Perfectly? No, right? That won't happen until He comes back again or we go to be with Him. But it need not be this aspect of always living as defeated people because of Christ. So how do we grow in that, and where do we grow in that? Well, again, that takes place in every area, heart, mind, soul, our activities, our pleasures. It's all being transformed. It's all being conformed to Christ. So there's no area of our life that we can go, well, that's off limits. Christ, you can have everything else, but you can't have that. You know, we can't have the junk drawer like we all have at our home, right, of our lives, where we go, I don't know where to put that, so I'm just going to put it here in the junk drawer. Anybody else have that? Or this closet, we just kind of stuff things in there and we never go in there, right? We can't have that in the soul. We can't have that in the heart and go, nope, God, you can't go in there. No, every aspect of us, Jesus says, is His. So when He looks at you, He goes, you're mine. Every part, every bit, from your heart, from your mind, from your soul, from your head to your toes. We belong to Christ Jesus. And oftentimes, the area that we're most reluctant to give over is probably the area that He's pressing in on and wanting to change and wanting to transform and to have growth. And then I'll just say this because I'm trying to make sure I don't impede upon Mr. Bino's time here. That growth will come in community. Yes, we can grow individually and should grow individually. But this is one of the joys and pleasures of being part of the church, is that we will grow more together than we will by ourselves. And we will be strengthened by the body. We will grow because of it. How many grow or do better if they go to a gym rather than work out by themselves? Or even better, if they have a trainer than if they try to do it on their own, right? I think everybody would say, yes, I would work out better or more if I have somebody else to do it with, or somebody else that's pushing me to do it, than if I just do it myself. And the same thing happens in the aspect of growing, that we grow together. We grow as the body of believers. Again, and so that's that aspect of we gather together to do these things in our mission statement. Yes, we are to do it individually, to know and to grow and show, but the blessing of the church is that we don't just do it alone, that we have one another. And so that is taking place all the time in community. And so let me just say, as I close up here and hand things over, That's got to be kind of a commitment for us. Again, this mission statement means nothing if it just is printed on a bulletin or a worship guide. It needs to kind of be imprinted upon our hearts. And so as we begin this year again, I hope you would make it an individual commitment as well as a corporate commitment to have this desire for growth. Again, we as a church can provide all the means, but if we don't partake of it, we will never grow, right? It's kind of like you can have the whole table set, but unless you eat, it does you no good. So this aspect of the preaching of the word, the teaching of the word, the Bible studies, these are all means by which you can truly grow as a believer, as a disciple of Christ. But you have to have that desire. You got to have that commitment. And then that doesn't just mean, you know, just going. Yes, that's a part of it. But even being here, while being here, that you are fully engaged with what's going on and what's taking place. One of my favorite quotes, and I'll finish with this, J.C. Ryle, one of my good dead friends from the 1800s, said this: "We must find no contentment in taking our bodies to church, but leaving our hearts at home." It's convicting, isn't it? We can be here in body and be somewhere totally else. But when we come to church or we come to engage in these things, would it be that that our bodies as well as our hearts are here? And so let's commit to it. Let's be the nucleus, the spark that generates it for the rest of the church. And let's continue to grow. If I can just give you one word picture of this no grow show, it would be the aspect of like a little plant, right? Or even a tree. The no is the roots. The grow is the stem and the branches. And then the show would be the leaves and the fruit that come as a result. If you would see all three of those things, you go, that's a healthy tree.